Tonight we'll begin with the second parak and 10th Mishnah, Pirkei Avos. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai kibel mehillel umeshamai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a Talmud of Hillel and Shammai. We explained that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was from the main Talmidim of Hillel HaZaken, but of all the Talmidim is considered from the lowest level, and with that he knew everything there is to know. It's hard to describe what the greatest Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was like. Who are you, Omer? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would say, "Im lamadet Torah harbe, if you've learned a lot of Torah, al tachzik Torah la'atzmecha, don't think you're so great. Ki lekach l'tzarta, this is what you were created for." The Rabbeinu Yoina, in his commentary on the Mishnah, says, "Im lamadet Torah harbe, if you've learned a lot of Torah, al tachzik Torah la'atzmecha, don't think you deserve any special congratulations." She'idayin ata b'tchila, because you're still just at the beginning. U'mosai tasig ar ha'emsa, when will you reach the middle? Barasof, or the end. Ki ha'teira aruchah me'eretz midah, aruchah me'niyam, the Torah is longer and wider than the land and the sea. Ve'en ha'sogos ha'enosh yichol hagia el karkatzei ha'acharon. Human mind is incapable of grasping and fathoming the depths of Torah. The Kama called the Meruch Gemeno, how distant are people from it? So how can he think that he deserves some kind of congratulations and recognition? For the Asa Torah Achas Mini Eleth Mashish Bulasais, and he's only done a thousandth of what there is to do. Torah is infinite. I don't know, it's beyond our ability to grasp. On one level, we could say that Rabbeinu Yoina is referring to what the Maharal writes is in his Nesiv HaTorah, Nesiv HaSalam, that the Torah is Hashem's Seichel Kavayochol, and how do we think a human being should be capable of understanding that? So it's really like a gift from Hashem that we understand any part of Torah at all. That we should be able to get anything in Torah is a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's irrational, it's illogical, that we should be able to understand Hashem's Torah. So one could say that's one element. But really, what Rabbi Yonah, I think, is saying more is that there's so much there to learn. And there's so much to learn, and a person can't think that he will be able to master the Torah because there's so much there. The Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer Shem Olam, writes about the person's obligation to learn and what it means to accomplish and learning Torah. And he says, you have to understand that the Ribbono Shel Olam created Adam HaRishon to learn Torah. Adam la'amal yulad, what was the amal he was created for? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, is la'amal Torah, to learn Torah. The person was created to toil in Torah. So Adam HaRishon was created to toil in Torah. And Adam HaRishon wasn't supposed to eat Eis HaDas Tovarah. So Adam HaRishon was supposed to live for thousands of years. So Adam HaRishon, let's say you want to learn the 6,000 years as the world, and the 7,000, something else is going to happen, we don't know what that is. So that means Adam HaRishon, for 6,000 years, is going to learn Torah. And he's not going to run out of things to learn. So, says the Chafetz Chaim, how much time do we have on this earth? And how much time do we spend learning Torah? Do we think we're going to get what we're supposed to get out of Torah? There's enough there for 6,000 years of constant learning. That's how Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world with Adam and Torah, and he's supposed to live 6,000 years. And now, we don't live that long, and in the time that we're living, we're not living all the time. So, how much are we going to get anyway? So that's how I hear this Rabbeinu Yoina. You learned a lot of Torah. What do you think that means? You think you're halfway there? You think you're finished? Torah, Zaruchim Eretz Midor, Chav Minayam. So you can't get there. So if you learned, it's wonderful you've learned, but it's not like you should be proud of yourself, so to speak, for getting so far. Because there's plenty more to learn. Having said that, it is important to understand the definition of what is limitless in Torah. Because in reality, there is a certain part of Torah that is finite. And in this Torah, that's not finite. And the Rambam, in his Hilchos Talmud Torah, says it, if you understand how he says it, how he explains it, we all know that Torah Shebichsav is finite. There's a written Torah from Bereishis through the end of Ksuvim, and it's a certain amount. That's it. It's finite. The written Torah is a finite amount of Sifrei Kodesh, 24 Sifrei Kodesh. Then there's Torah Shebaal Peh. And on Sinai, Ribono Shel Olam gave to Moshe Rabbeinu Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And Torah Shebaal Peh explains the Torah Shebichsav. If you understand Torah Shebichsav, it's all there. All the Torah Shebaal Peh is in the Torah Shebichsav. We don't see it, so we spend a lot of time learning the Torah Shebaal Peh to understand, and we always try to find a way back to the Pasuk where it's hinted to or alluded to in the Chumash or in the Nevi'im Iksuv. The Rambam writes that if you go through my Sefer Yad HaChazakah, you will learn the entirety of Torah Shebaal Peh. And that is why there are some Chassidim who sit and learn Rambam, because that's how they learn Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, Torah Shebichsav is finite, so wouldn't Torah Shebaal Peh be infinite? And many people believe it is. The Rambam is saying Torah Shebaal Peh is not infinite. Torah Shebaal Peh is finite, just like Torah Shebichsav is finite. What is Arucha Me'eretz Midah U'rechava Miniyam? The Rambam says is a third category. The third category is called Gemara. There's Mikra, Mishneh, and Gemara. Mikra is Torah Shebichsav. Mishneh is Torah Shebaal Peh, which is finite. Gemara is endless. What is the difference? So Mikra is obviously Torah Shebichsav. We know the Chavta Tzfarim. Mishneh, or Torah Shebaal Peh, are the halachas that we learn when we go through Talmud. And someone who goes through Talmud and knows the halachas that come from that has learned the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. Gemara, the Rambam says, is understanding the logic and how it gets back to the Chumash and how every single halacha can be found somewhere, if not directly hinted to an extra letter of a word in the Chumash. That, there's no limit to that. That goes on and on and on. That's Gemara. And the Rambam says, a person has to learn Torah Shebichsav in its entirety. Every man has such an obligation. Part of Talmud Torah is to learn the entire Torah Shebichsav. And to learn the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. And when you've done that, you can spend the rest of your days learning Gemara. And you'll review Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh here and there. But you'll spend most of the rest of your days learning Gemara. So, in the Rambam's definition, there's a finite Torah Shebichsav, a finite Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's an absolute obligation for everyone to do that. And Gemara is limitless. And there can't be an obligation on that, because how do you give someone an obligation you can't possibly fulfill? And that's like the catch in of the whole thing. Give a second. In other words, we have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The mitzvah is to learn the whole Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh. Well, how do you give someone an obligation? It takes 6,000 years to learn it, and no one lives that long. How could that be? The answer is no. Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh, a person can learn in a lifetime. Gemara, that can go on for 6,000 years. That can go on and on and on. That's what's limitless. We, out of habit, kind of refer to Gemara as Torah Shebaal Peh. We think of it all as the same. We lump it together. The Torah Shebaal Peh is the oral Torah, and it just goes on and on and on. The Rambam, in fact, breaks it into two distinct entities. There's Torah Shebaal Peh, which is in fact finite, and Gemara, which is in fact infinite, and that's what we say a person will never finish learning Gemara. It doesn't mean, again, when we say we go through Talmud Bavli and we refer to that as Gemara, that in fact is finite. It's more understanding how everything goes back and traces its way back, and that's, by the way, not everything in the Gemara is explained like that. Some things are, but many other things are not, and that a person can spend a lifetime understanding the logic and where this is derived from and what is the meaning behind these things, and that's not finite at all. Question?
Yeah, we sometimes refer to people as
When we say someone knows Torah Kola Torah Kula, I would say that means he has a very good grasp or knowledge of Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. But to say that a person is a master of Gemara is impossible. Because it's impossible. It's not humanly possible.
So it's just used as like a describing.
I think when we say Kol Torah Kula, we mean the entirety of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebe'al Peh, which is a good feat to have. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. But the point is, the Gemara goes on and on. You know, when we think of great people, when I think of great people, so there's obviously the Torah Shebichtav, which unfortunately is not as much studied as it should be. This goes back to historical, the Haskalah movement, and the taking of Mikra and turning it into something which it isn't, and then the yeshivas want to study it, and then it's somehow, I think today is associated with Zionism somehow, and it's Torah. Everyone has to learn Torah. Why Bacharim and yeshiva aren't learning Tanakh? I don't know. You know, there's some Messiah, I guess, from Volozhin. I don't know. But ultimately, they have to do it. It's an absolute requirement for every boy to learn the entirety of Tanakh. And they're not finishing it when they're in Cheder by the time they graduate 8th grade. Maybe once upon a time they did, but not anymore. So that's something people have to spend time on, making sure they learn Tanakh. But on top of that, there is the Torah Shebe'al Peh, which is finite, which we refer to as the Gemara, and then there's the Poskim, which are essentially, we say Poskim, meaning the commentaries on the Gemara, the Rosh and the Ran and the Rif, and then there's the other Rishonim who comment on it, and then the next level will be the Achronim and the Shulchan Aruch, and then the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. So there were great, great people who knew these things backwards and forwards and learned it hundreds of times, literally. And they knew every Se'if and Shulchan Aruch and every comment of the commentaries and every comment of the super commentaries who comment on the commentaries. And they knew all that inside out. These are great, great, great people. And there are not that many of them. There are not that many of those kinds of people around. Yeah.
If somebody doesn't show for laying the Eric Hashem and Haftarah and Ovelin, is that most of Tanakh?
No.
As if you learned it?
Why is that most of Tanakh?
Well, it's not.
It might be Chamush Chamush Torah. Hopefully he does Rashi with it. As far as Nevi'im, how much Nevi'im are you going to do?
Well, you cover.
You do a parak and a half a week.
So if someone just learns Nevi'im, because Ksuvim is almost
Tehillim, the Megillus. The Megillus, Tehillim. People get stuck on Eve. No, that's it. You get stuck on Eve. Same thing, you get stuck on Yeshaya.
Daniel.
You get through the Yeshachana. It's not so bad. But people get stuck on Eve. But anyway, it's something that people are obligated to do. It's an obligation.
Is it part of like a Seder? People just okay?
In yeshivas? No. It's not that in yeshivas.
Well, like Torah is part of, like Shanai Mikra is part of Seder. No. It's not time to learn, but
it's out of the yeshiva siddur.
Right. But Nevi'im doesn't have
it. Nope. No, there's no Shnei Mikra on Novi either on Haftarah kind of stuff. There's none of that.
So why not? It's an obligation. Why is it an obligation?
Gotta do it. Gotta do it. Absolutely. Gotta do it. But it's not part of yeshiva siddur.
Why not though? That's what I'm saying. How could they excuse it?
I don't know. When boys are younger, they learn in elementary certain parts of Navi.
And that's counted?
The learning. But by the time, it used to be, by the time boys are mitzvah, he knew Tanakh.
What does it mean to learn?
To know it, to learn it.
So if they don't remember it after the test?
That's not learning.
It is learning, it's not.
No. Gotta remember it.
Forever.
You gotta review it, of course. It's not like a one time I looked at it once. Like I once tasted chocolate 5 years ago. Yeah, that's not how it works.
Wait, so isn't enough then for a sacred Torah to do like, you know, once that week?
Right, so for Chumash, if you review every week that parasha with Rashi, right, you'll eventually know Chumash Rashi real good. If you do it every week, year in and year out.
Okay, that's just Torah though. It's not.
Yeah, it's Torah Shebichtav. And you still have to get the Navi somewhere. So someone told me now, this past year, told the Rebbe in Yerushalayim, told his Hasidim, they have to attempt Sukkim of Navi every day. Either Rashi or Matsudas, every day. If you're my Chassid, you have to learn attempt Sukkim of Navi. And someone asked me if we should institute it in our shul. And I said, no. We're not going to institute it in our shul. It's a nice thing. It's a wonderful thing. I'd rather them make Shulam Chumash Rashi every week before I tell them to attempt Sukkim of Navi every week. Or every day, I should say. But it's an important thing. Learning Navi is important. People have to learn Navi. It used to be that, well, The great people all knew Navi. Just today it's become lost in the yeshivas, they don't teach it, and then people stop learning it. It's something that has to be done, even if it's not done within the regular hours of yeshiva study. Getting back to, yeah.
What he considers finite, mm-hmm. the commentary on Torah Shebuch Sav, he considers that finite.
Torah Shebuch Sav is finite. The Torah itself is finite. Now, when you get the commentary, mm-hmm. you can go on and on and on, because you get into all kinds of Gemara, essentially. What do I learn from these psukim?
It has to be just...
Torah means learning the psukim and understanding what it means. Okay. So, Chumash Rashi is fine, and that's mm-hmm. already understanding what the Chumash is saying. Yes.
What's Medrash
considered? Medrash is a part of Agarata, which is the chelik of Torah Shebuch Sav. It's Agarata. And what is Agarata? Agarata is essentially the Musar, the ethics, if you will, if you like, if that's the word you like to use, of how we're supposed to live our lives. And hidden in the Medrash are all kinds of secret stuff. A lot of Kabbalah is hidden in the Medrash. And Ramchal writes this in his introduction to Medrash, that we don't take all the Medrashim literally because it's there as a code. And you have to know how to decode. And they don't want it to be so obvious for everybody, because some of it is sodos, so therefore they went out of their way to make it sound like one thing and mean something else. And that's where we get all these strange things, like Paro was 2 feet tall, and Moshe Rabbeinu was 20 feet tall, so why don't you just step on him? You know, that kind of thing. you know, there are other things here besides the literal of what is being said with these midrashim.
Because so many times, also, like when people, when they teach, you know, the younger grades,
it's a big complaint that I've heard from great people that we teach little children midrashim. There's absolutely no reason to teach them midrashim. It's just confusing. They have the question I just asked you. They can't understand. Children have no pshat. The teachers don't find it gishmak to teach pshat, so they want to teach all the midrashim they know. But it really, I don't think it's really the correct method of teaching children, that they should be learning all these midrashim.
They teach the same midrashim too. Like if you go ask a kid in Lakewood, they know the same exact...
Because they have the same, you know, medrash says, and or right. little medrash says, and I'm convinced that it was written by a woman who put her husband's name on it, just... People shouldn't complain. I'm really convinced of that. But this is something that's an issue. When you're mechanic and how you teach a child chumash, it should be pshat. Children should be sharp pshat. And they say, one second, what Rashi says, I'm coming to teach pshuto shel mikra. So why are you blaming me for saying over a medrash that Rashi quotes? Well, Rashi will be midrashim all the time. And he feels it fits in with the pasuk, but there's very often a pshat without getting into that. And for the teachers, it's more exciting and everything. You tell the stories the way the medrash says it. But I just find it's perhaps a little confusing for the kids. Yeah?
This was a technical question. Page of Gemara has the big words is Mishnah, which is Torah Shebuch Sav, and the small words around it is Perush, which is Gemara, which is...
No. In a page of Talmud, the way it's printed, the way we have it, the actual text on the page is Mishnah and Gemara. And Gemara, when we say Gemara, it means Braisa, Tosefta, all the Tanoim, Amoroyim, debating what the Tanoim meant, and all the halachas that we have come from that text.
That's after Mishnah?
It's all the same size letters.
Okay.
On the sides, Rashi is the inner...
That's
comment, Tosfos is in the outer columns.
Which is the considered finite, which is considered infinite?
Both of these are finite. Talmud Bavli is finite. We call it Gemara.
And the Perushim?
Because a lot of it is Gemara. But that's where we get our halacha from. Beyond Talmud Bavli is when we talk about Gemara, which is infinite.
Like Rashi, Tosfos, that's...
They're explaining the Gemara.
So then what's the...
What's infinite? Infinite is the svaros, the logic, and where we find the sources for these halachos in Mikra. And not
that's
all,
not
some of it, some of it's explained in the Gemara, some of it isn't. That's why we call it Gemara, because some of Talmud Bavli is Gemara. Some of it does that. Not all of it.
Okay, also, said that Medrash is an Agadah,
mm-hmm.
so that's like
Agata is the Musar of Chazal.
That's part of Gemara?
Sometimes.
Talmud,
it's some of it's in the Talmud, some of it's not. Parts of it are in the Talmud. So parts of it are, and Yaakov is taking from the Talmud those Agatas.
And that's Medrash?
No, Medrash is a separate book. Medrash is a standalone Sefer. But it's they're both Agatas.
But they're separate.
Okay, so Yechon Mezakeh begins by saying, you learned a lot of Torah, don't think you know so much. And the more people learn, the more they realize what they don't know. That's, I think, a universal truth. The more people know, the more they realize what they don't know. Then the Ben Yonah goes on, the last part, why shouldn't you think you're so great? Ki l'kach notzarta. This is what you were created for. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu lo himtziyacha yesh me'ayin rak la'asos torasa." The Ibn Hashem didn't create you from nothing for any other purpose than to fulfill the Torah. V'gam yizeh ha'tam, and from this reason, ein lecha lahachzik Torah la'atzmecha imasisa Torah. But you shouldn't think you're great if you've done a lot of Torah. Ki l'kach nasadi. That's why you were created. U'mashul l'bal ha'chov shepara eschovo. It could be compared to a debtor who pays off his loans. He gets a yeshikayich, he feels good, he's appreciated to pay him off the loan. If I borrow from someone $100 and I pay him back, the lender says thank you or the borrower says thank you? The borrower says thank you, not the lender. Right? That could be a nice lender will say thank you anyway, thank you for paying me back, and I'll never see that money again. But the point is, it's the responsibility of the borrower to say thank you. Now, it could be, you'll tell me there's a halachic shah that I say thank you. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. There is a halacha in Hilchos Ribbis that you cannot take interest or give interest, and Ribbis Devarim, words, are also considered interest. And therefore, when you borrow money, you're not allowed to tell the lender thank you. You don't know the story with Reb Shimon Schwab, Zichron Avracha, when he was a Talmud in the Meir Yeshiva, he had no money to get back home to Frankfurt for Yontif, Ben Ezmanim. So he went to the Mashgiach of Yochum Lavovitz to borrow money from the Yeshiva, and he gave him money, and he said, thank you. And Reb Yochum gave him a Musar Shmuel. He said, don't say thank you. You can't say thank you on a loan. You say thank you on a loan. That's ribbis. That's paying interest. Not how to do that. You can't give interest on a loan. You don't say thank you on a loan. Okay? Didn't know. A year later, he only went home once a year. A year later, he needs to get money again to go home. He'll bring back, when he goes back to Shul, he'll bring the money back. But he comes to Mashgiach to borrow money, and Yeruchim gives him money, and he says nothing, and he turns around and walks away. And he calls, wait a second, where are you going? What's going on? I give you money, you just walk out? That's Derech Eretz? I thought I'm not allowed to say thank you. You're not allowed to say thank you. You have to want to say thank you. You have to, like, oh, like I wish I could say thank you, but I can't say thank you. You just walk out. There is a lot of discussion in Poskim about saying thank you. The minig is not to say thank you. I've heard different sfaras why it should be okay. Most forms say not to. They all say not to give a bracha. You can't say zayge bench, tisku lemitzvus, and we make tisku lemitzvus. You can't do that. You can't give a bracha to someone because they lent you money. That becomes ribbis. At least that's what some poskim say. It could be, on all these things I'm telling you, other poskim would disagree, but there are many who say, like I'm telling you, that that's called ribbis devarim. So you could tell them, this is really very helpful to me. That you can say. You could acknowledge that his lending you the money makes a difference. That you could say.
Why is that different than saying thank you?
I'm expressing that I really needed this money. It's very helpful to me. That's not saying thank you. Right?
It's expressing the same gratitude.
I'm showing that I'm grateful without saying thank you. That you're allowed to do. That you're allowed to do. Yes.
Why can't you show gratitude? Why
is you right? Can't give him something for the money he's giving you. And even a nice word that would not have given otherwise is considered interest. Now, if I see this fellow every day and I say good morning to him every day, I can't not say good morning to him the day after I brought money because it's ribbis. That's not ribbis. I say good morning every day. But someone who you never say hello to and all of a sudden he lent you money, you can't go to them, oh, good morning, how are you?
So
that would be ribbis. You can't do that.
You money and you bake a cake for them.
What?
That's ribbis.
If what?
Like, let's say someone lends you money, you bake a cake for them. That's ribbis.
If the gratitude is expressed at the time the loan is taken or paid off is a problem. If it's expressed later or earlier, it could be, it's okay. It's specifically at the time of the loan that we're particularly worried about this. The good morning is different because I never talked to him, and now all of a sudden he's my friend. But as far as the actual thank or gratitude, if it's not tied into the zman of the loan, it could be, it's okay. Anyways, he gives this mashal. A person lends money, and the fellow pays it back. So he thinks when he pays back the money that the lender is supposed to say, thank you for paying me back. Of course not. That's what's going on when you learn Torah. Hashem created you on Torah. So if you learn Torah, it's like you're paying back your debt. And he says the same is true for mitzvahs. If you've done many mitzvahs, al tachzik Torah la'atzmecha, kidekach l'sartom. So the Ben Yonah adds, it's not just Torah. The wording of the mission is very clear. Melamadat Torah harbi, al tachzik Torah la'atzmecha, kidekach l'sartom. The Ben Yonah says the same is true with mitzvahs. You've done lots of mitzvahs. You can't think that you should be getting something special because of it. Now, this is an important principle. This really is an important yesod that we have to think about because it's a pitfall that many of us have. Maybe it's a human pitfall, it's maybe a misunderstanding, or just we don't look at things the way we should. When people do good things, and we should do good things all the time, we kind of expect to be appreciated for what we do. Whether it's at work, whether it's volunteering, whether it's at home, whether it's in a household, husband, wife, people do nice things for other people and they kind of expect to get appreciation for what they do. And if they don't get appreciation for what they do and they're expecting appreciation for what they do, you're going to have a very unhappy camper because they're going to be aggravated and frustrated and irritated and all the other good things. Why does anyone appreciate me? I work so hard. No one can say thank you. And it gets worse from there. That's the nice way, and then it goes on and on. Now, I remember someone who does community service who was like really upset that his work was not being recognized. And a wise older man said to him, I was in his presence, he says, you're waiting for someone to pat you on the back? You're waiting for someone to say, good job? That's fairy tales. That's not real life. You can't live your life that way, expecting that you're going to do good and you're going to be recognized for the good you're doing. You just be disappointed. Do good because it's the right thing to do. Don't worry about being recognized for what you do. Don't think about being recognized for what you do. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And you know inside, I did what I was supposed to do. Don't wait for recognition. Don't wait for that pat on the back. It's not happening. In the real world, it usually doesn't happen. Now, there are occasions it does. There are occasions it does, and very often the cynical among us say, oh, he'll be fired next week. You know, that's his last year on the job. That's when they give him the award, and that's when they make him the honoree, because they know he's on the way out. It's not common. And the truth is, I think that's partially what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to tell us. In Lamarat Tera Harbe, if you did Mitzvah Harbe, Al Tachzik Tev La'atzmacha, you don't go around with the expectation that I'll be appreciated for what I've done. You're put in this world to do the right things. You're put in this world to do mitzvahs. You're put in this world to learn Torah. So you learn Torah and you do mitzvahs. Don't have the expectations that you'll be appreciated and feel depressed and despondent when you're not. Mind you, and here's where it gets really hard. You have to be appreciative of what anyone does for you. So on the one hand, we have to ooze appreciation. When someone does something for us, we have to express it. That's so kind of you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much. The supper was delicious. I appreciate you went to the store to pick this up. People do things for us all the time. We, on the receiving end, must be appreciative. We have to be appreciative for everything. And we should express it. And we should let people know we appreciate it. But at the same time, don't expect it for yourself. That's what makes it hard. In other words, it's not like, okay, I live in a world without appreciation, and no one appreciate me, and I don't appreciate them. That's not right either. The Ramchal has a whole discussion about kavod, and kavod's a terrible thing, and you shouldn't pursue kavod, and Chaim Shmuel Levitz says, so why did Hashem create us with this notion of kavod, if it's such a horrible thing? Yerov ben Nevat lost everything because of kavod. Bnei Korach, everything because of kavod. So it's horrible what kavod leads to. Why does it exist? And he says, because we have to give kavod to people. We have to know what kavod is to give kavod, not to receive kavod. You don't want to be on the receiving end of kavod, and don't expect kavod, and don't do things to get kavod, but you have to know what it is to give kavod. So there are things that are in this world that we have to practice for others. You have to give kavod to others. You have to give hakaras hatov to others. But don't expect kavod for yourself. Don't crave kavod for yourself. Don't expect appreciation. Don't crave it. It's very hard. I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying it's easy. But it's not like you can ignore it entirely. It's there for us to use for others. And I believe if a person works on it, you can feel a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction when you do for others, even if you don't do it for yourself. And you don't need it for yourself, and I can live without it, and I don't need it, and I'm perfectly fine by making someone else have a happy day and giving them a smile and tell them what a great person they are and how great their job is. I don't need them to say it to me. I need to say it to them, and I'm fine with that. Now, maybe it takes a certain degree of self-esteem, that you understand who you are and you feel good about yourself. So I don't need anyone else to sell me I'm great. I know I'm great. I don't need anyone else to sell me great. Right? That's not necessarily gaiva. I'm not saying this is gaiva. People with good self-esteem aren't necessarily arrogant. There's a difference. It's often confused. I've seen that people confuse someone who's self-confident with arrogance. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. So you have to feel good about yourself and be happy doing for others. And again, not worry about what are they doing for me next. And again, this is almost like if you needed a special recipe for success in life, this is probably part of that recipe, whether it's marriage or business relationships, whatever it is. Doing for others without waiting for them to do for you. That's how the Mechtav Ayo talks about it in the context of a marriage. Appreciate others. Don't crave others' appreciation. Ultimately, the way the Mishnah says it, this is why Hashem put us here. Hashem put us here to do this job. And therefore, we're not extra special because we did what we're supposed to do. You do what you're supposed to do. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. And it's great. And it would be nice if we are appreciated for what we do. But we can't anticipate it. We can't expect it. And we certainly cannot demand it. There are some people who demand appreciation. That's not exactly what the intention is. That's exactly backwards of what we're talking about. Yes?
What about someone who, like let's say a teacher or someone who waits at the classroom for students to stand up?
If a teacher demands, so to speak, that the students rise for the teacher and then walk in, I would assume the teacher is endeavoring to train them in the proper derech eretz. I'm teaching you what is the proper derech eretz. When a teacher walks in the room, you stand up for the teacher. Not that I need the kavod, not that I'm doing it for myself. I'm doing it because they need to be trained in derech eretz. I would hope that's what's going on. I personally have a hard time with that. And I remember Simbach would always say, the other teachers have to demand that that teacher gets. In other words, if someone is not having derech eretz, whatever Simbach, she can't be the one to say, you know, that's not derech eretz. Someone else has to tell them that's not derech eretz, whatever Simbach. You can't demand your own covenant. Someone else has to do it. And again, it's really a chinuch thing. But even from a chinuch perspective, she felt she can't be the one to machanech have derech eretz for me. So therefore, I'm kind of like, I think that's the correct school of thought. You can't, I have a hard time teaching derech eretz to a teacher when I'm the teacher. I could teach someone else for someone else, but I wouldn't do it for myself, so to speak. I think in the student's mind it's very confusing because it looks as if the teacher demands their own kavod for themselves. Yes?
Can it just be like a practical way for the girls to realize the break is over, stand up, be quiet, class is there? That's why it was
with the
bells
for.
Well,
like, that worked.
Maybe it depends on how old the kids are.
Meaning, like, what older you would and younger you would?
The older, I think, don't need it.
They need it more.
All right. I can't comment.
They're not really thinking right now, I'm going to come to the teacher, they're thinking I have to stand up because you're standing there waiting.
Well, I have to stand up because I'm standing waiting.
Just
be quiet.
Just the teacher, whenever a teacher does that, they like stand there, top one standing quietly.
Why did this wait till the kids learn to be quiet now? Teachers
can
be quiet.
A lot of times, what comes to the kid's mind is not, I'm standing up for my teacher and giving him cover, it's doing it for the specific teacher because it's not like they're practicing in other classes. And
I would assume that they're teaching the kids that you're supposed to stand up when a teacher walks in the room. Not them personally, any teacher. Do you want somebody to stand up?
They don't sit down for the first time until the teacher comes in. They'll stand until the bell rings until you tell them to stop.
So you just say, please be seated. Let's get started. What?
They still talk
to you. All right. So then you have to learn the tricks of the trade. There are things you can do to get children to quiet down. Yes?
Is it... like needing to feed your own kavodness to demand appreciation in a marriage?
I don't think it's healthy to ever demand appreciation, period. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to give appreciation. Maybe I would change the way you said it from demand appreciation to demand respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
And I do think that a person has the right to demand respect. If they feel they're not being respected, they could demand respect. Now, I don't mean in the sense of cover, like stand up for me. It's the idea of respecting the person and what they're about and so on.
But what if you sleep over dinner all day and you're not feeling very high self-esteem, and you need that appreciation, then...
If you slave over dinner and you don't feel that your dinner is appreciated, you're not going to slave over dinner next night. You're going to say, we're having peanut butter and jelly for supper. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of...
If ever since I heard years ago...
You can't just keep it all inside. That you can't just walk around being resentful all day that your husband never notices. But you do. That's unhealthy too.
That's true. But he'll get the mess when you give some peanut butter and jelly the next
time.
Not
necessarily.
But isn't that more of a kind of like passive-aggressive way of dealing with it?
It could be. I know there was a fellow who wanted to compliment his wife's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And she made a certain thing that they sell in the stores, and she did it from scratch. And he said, wow, this is almost as good as the one in the store. She never made it again. You like the one in the store better, we'll get you the one in the store.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. he thought he was being complimentary, but he didn't understand that wasn't the nicest compliment. In any event, there are well-meaning people who make mistakes, but as far as being appreciative, listen, if someone doesn't have a chinuch in saying thank you, I guess there comes a point you have to, he's got to be told by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That this is not acceptable behavior.
Would you suggest having someone else hint to them, or say it straight up?
I don't think it's a problem for a wife to call the rabbi to speak to her husband about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some women feel it's a lack of communication, we should discuss it openly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's for them to decide what's the best way for them to address that.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember one time when I was a bacher with a friend of mine, we were invited to eat at someone's house Friday night, and I'm complimenting everything she's serving, everything, and he keeps like nudging me in the rib, and it came out she made nothing. Everything was bought. Like, everything, She didn't make anything. And I'm saying, oh, it's hard to make this. So good. And he keeps like, shh. What's your problem? It's just to say thank you. Everything, she worked so hard. In the end, she just went to the store, bought everything made. Didn't realize that. I don't know. It's almost like I can't understand where they're coming from. But if someone didn't have if they didn't see it in their house, mm-hmm. I guess that's where it boils down to. If a boy never grew up seeing appreciation and seeing, you know, gratitude and helpful. I once saw in a book that Dr. Tversky wrote that it's a very valuable thing for a girl to marry a boy whose father washes dishes. If the boy grew up in home seeing his father wash the dishes, there's a sort of appreciation for what the wife does in the house, and he's going to help and so on. Unfortunately, a lot of boys don't see that. If dishwasher is busy, whatever it is, it's something that boys have to see in the home, ultimately. If the wife tells him that, you know, I slaved all day, I spent hours on this, you don't say thank you. So, will it change him? Mm-hmm. He has to work on it. He'll have to work on it. That's not
usually, by the time somebody says thank you after you've gone on and on about it, you don't even appreciate their thank you because you know they're only just saying because of that. So I think your point is to eventually get it into their mind that when you do something...
Of course, like, you know, the kid gets the candy, and say thank you. Until right. You have to slap the kid, they say thank you. So, you know, all right. But there's a chinuch. But, you know, when a person's an adult and they don't know that, that's sad. So.
Note of forcing kids to say thank you, what forcing them to say sorry, is that good bad
the child did something wrong, mm-hmm. They shouldn't acknowledge they did something wrong,
but you're also kind of telling them to lie and they're not sorry.
There's a difference between acknowledging what they did and saying they're sorry.
Or the way I think we once said in class, they didn't say I'm sorry and I apologize.
Right.
a child, I think, can be taught to acknowledge that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. Not easy, but they have to. And sometimes they get the message. I don't think it's important to have to say it if they get it. Mm-hmm. This is a separate issue of how to deal with kids. Kids are their own world. You know, little kids for sure. And people have to understand that. Some parents don't understand their kids. And it's terrible, you know. I remember someone saying, these kids are all, they're liars. They said that we did this yesterday and we didn't do it yesterday, we're going to do it. You know, for a kid, yesterday is anything in the past. It could have been a year ago. It's called yesterday. They're not lying. And I once heard this even from a psychologist who came to talk if a kid takes some of the mother's purse. He said, ganef. Not necessarily. Depends on their age. There could be, they're not a gun. If they don't understand that that's not appropriate behavior, they don't see themselves as stealing. And they say, you stole. I did not steal. And you think, he's lying. He's not lying. And he didn't steal in his mind. Because you have to know what's age appropriate for kids before you start making decisions about their morality and what they are about. And unfortunately, a lot of parents don't get it or don't understand. And maybe you can't blame them because you're not given a parent guidebook when you give birth to a baby. But it would be worthwhile. Our parents understand kids, understand how they think, how they relate to the world. And there's some very special people who just get it. They understand kids relate to them, and they understand the psyche of a child, and other people need to study it and read about it, and nothing wrong with that, to try to, you know, be a proper parent. So getting back to the theme here, no matter what we do, no matter how much we do, we have to realize that's what we're here for. And that's like, this is the olive base. This is not extra special. And therefore, we really should not need or crave that appreciation. And we shouldn't expect the Rebbeinu Hashem is going to answer all my tefillos now because I finished Sefer Tehillim this month, or because I finished the Masechta, or because I did this chesed, and I stayed up with this child, and the mother went to the hospital, and I had such a tzaddikus now, and I expect all my tefillos will be answered. It doesn't work that way. You know, you do what you're supposed to do, and you don't expect anything special. There is one time, to my knowledge, in Chumash, that one time we say Machzik Teiva, someone deserved Hasakas Teiva. One time. Remember? Rashi Chumash, if you don't Chumash Rashi. But you usually don't do it in the school year. So, can't blame if you never learned during the year. It's in Parshas Pinchas. Excellent. Pinchas. Shalom. The Baruch Hashem says special Pinchas is going to get a special bris shalom. Rashi says I'll be machzik toiva to Pinchas for what he did. What Pinchas did was unusual. It was not in the normal realm. The way I understand the way it's being brought down, when everyone does one thing and you don't go with the tide and you stand up against the stream and you're going to do what's right in defiance of everyone around you, that's like beyond what is expected of any human being. And if you actually do that, then you get special treatment. Machzik Toivah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machzik Toivah to Pinchas for what he did. Everyone saw what was going on. He was the only one who stood up and did something about it. And there are occasions when people do that, and the Samarov says this in Parshas Ekev, Ekev Shetishmon, the mitzvahs that people trample underfoot with the heel. So the pasuk get all kinds of schar. And Satmarov says, there's no schar mitzvah in this world. But if you stand up and do what's right when no one else does, mitzvahs that everyone trods underfoot, and you're going to do that mitzvah, you're not going to take it lightly, you'll get schar in this world. Because you are on a different level. You are doing beyond what is expected of a person. Doesn't mean you're off the hook if you didn't do it. You're supposed to do these mitzvahs. But when you do the mitzvah that everyone else forsakes, then you have a special zechus. So that's when you talk Hakzakas Toivah, at least defined in the Chumash, this concept when they went beyond what was reasonably expected from a person.
Does that mean like not one person besides you does it, or is it like mainstream, most people?
When you have to be different than your friends and community to do this. It doesn't have to be a yachid or yachida, but it means this is not what normal people do.
So, if this is what we're supposed to be doing, all those, you know, that's what we're supposed to do, good, we're supposed to help, we're supposed to do chesed, so then when is a person considered a tzaddik? Because whatever he's doing, that's what he's supposed to be doing, that's what we're here for.
Right. So a tzaddik who does exactly what he's supposed to do should not feel like it's any special treatment because I'm a tzaddik. I'm just doing what I'm here to do. This is exactly what he's supposed to be doing.
Okay, so then...
And by the way, a tzaddik does not expect special treatment.
Okay, now I'm expecting it, but that's what he's supposed to be doing. That's what
right.
We're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. That's what we're doing. We're all supposed to be tzaddikim and kanyos. Exactly. That's correct. And we're supposed to think nothing special because we are. That's what, and the chiddush would go weiter. And if I'm a chassid, I'm beyond tzaddik. It's further. There's so much more for me to accomplish. They also don't expect things for their chassidus, for their being extra special.